Know then that I am an enemy to vice and a friend to virtue. I am one of an extensive charity and a great forgiver of private injuries, a hearty lover of the clergy and all good men, and a mortal enemy to arbitrary government and unlimited power. Benjamin Franklin, writing as Silence Do-Good.
Welcome to Meridians.
Hello, and welcome to Meridians. I'm your host, Charlie Noble. If you're one of the dozens of people who've listened to episodes 1 through 7, first, I want to thank you for giving my show a shot and sticking with it. Today, I'm announcing that the show's format will change slightly moving forward. If you're not familiar with the show, each episode hops from topic to topic, where I peruse history, science, and culture, and string together ideas from a starting topic to an ending topic. It was a fun format, and I'm glad I started the show out that way, but I kind of think it's time for a change. So moving forward, I'm going to focus mostly on one topic each episode. However, in the spirit of this show, the end of the episode will connect to the next episode. And this way I can dig into a topic better, give better information, and also it's just a little more practical for me to do. I'm also going to make the show weekly and put the show in just more smaller digestible chunks. So with that announcement out of the way, I decided it only made sense to start with Benjamin Franklin because he's such a prolific figure in history, and I can branch off from his life into any number of topics from the American Revolution, maybe more on humanism, the post-revolution of France, science, all kinds of things off of him. But today, I'm covering something I found pretty interesting, and that's Benjamin Franklin's youth, really his teenage years working with his brother in his print shop. So without any further to-dos, let's just get on with the show, shall we? Benjamin Franklin was born in 1706 in Boston. The town probably had about 7,000 to 9,000 people living there at the time. It was part of the Massachusetts Bay Colony, which had been founded in 1628 by Puritans who were seeking religious freedom from the Church of England. Ironically, for a group of people who were seeking religious freedom, the Massachusetts Bay Colony had little tolerance for other religious views. These people were pretty damned religious. Now, they were Puritans. Specifically, they were English Protestants who disagreed with the Church of England. The Church of England had broken away from the Catholic Church back in the 16th century. The Puritans didn't think that the Church of England had parted ways with Catholicism enough. Now, you might be thinking, wait a second, isn't Boston super Catholic these days? Well, yes, it is. It's one of the more Catholic cities in the United States, with around 30% of the population identifying as such. But that came much later with waves of Catholic Irish immigrants arriving in the United States. But back in 1706, when little Benny Franklin was born, it was very much a Puritan environment. And the best way I can think to describe Puritans is that they boiled down religion and got rid of a lot of that Catholic pomp. Less elaborate rituals, less hierarchy in the church. It was about studying the Bible and having a direct relationship with God. Franklin claimed to have read the entire Bible by the time he was 5 years old, which is pretty impressive for a little guy. I wonder how much he really absorbed from that, though. I want to set the stage a bit now before we get too far into Franklin's life. Early on, the colonial government in the Massachusetts Bay Colony was very much run like you'd expect. It was a British colony that had a royal charter set in 1628 and was operating under that for many years. They even had a sort of legislature with a general court that made rules for local matters. They even had a governor who was elected locally. But the colonies would continuously violate the charter set down by England. They would trade with nations they weren't authorized to trade with, and of course they would follow their own religious practices, practices not supported by the Church of England. This dynamic changed in 1684. King Charles II had enough of the colony's insubordination. He revoked the charter and put several colonies, including Massachusetts, into a single royal dominion. The English crown was losing control, so they squeezed tighter on the colonies. But things back at home in England weren't going so well for the crown either. Only 4 years later, in 1689, the Glorious Revolution took place in England, and the crown was deposed in favor of Protestant rulers. The result of this was that a new charter for the Massachusetts Bay Colony was made in 1691. The Puritans in the colonies likely supported this revolution at first because it shifted power away from the remaining Catholic power in England. Catholics were also barred from the throne from then on. However, the new charter would mean changes for the government in New England, in the colonies. A key difference was that the colonial governors would now be appointed by the British crown. This part of American history I never quite understood well. It seems that a big driver in the American Revolution would have been this shift backwards to less autonomy. They had been operating for around 60 years with locally elected leaders and governors that were elected by them, and now the British crown wants to suddenly put Pandora back in the box? Sure, they still had locally elected assemblies, but now what strife they had already had with England would increase, and now it would also extend to the now appointed governors. Back to Franklin's life now. Franklin grew up with 11 brothers and sisters, and he was the youngest. His father made soap and candles for a living, and his mother raised the family. When young Benjamin was 8 years old, his father sent him to South Grammar School so that he could prepare for a life as a minister. However, the family couldn't afford it, and soon Benjamin would be back at a traditional school, George Brunel's English school. Benjamin only went to school for 1 year before his family again had to drop him out of school because the tuition was too high. So this is 1716. Benjamin is 10 years old and he's done with school. That's it. He basically got 1 year of school at George Brownell's English school, and that's all there is to it. For a couple of years then after, Benjamin Franklin would just help at his dad's shop. He might not have become anything, just a person no one would ever remember. But then fate stepped in. Benjamin Franklin would end up working as an apprentice to his half-brother James, who was a printer. Not a shitty HP inkjet printer that costs less than the ink. No, I mean a man who prints things. A printer! Into the 1720s, the printing industry was expanding. They used a wooden press that, when pressure was applied, ink would be transferred from type to paper. The typesetting was all done by hand, so if you looked at a newspaper from the 1700s or even a bit later, all those letters had to be put in place one by one. But then you'd slam down that wooden press onto paper and make about 400, 500, 800 copies of whatever you're printing. The whole idea of newspapers and periodicals was still pretty new at the beginning of the 18th century. The first English language newspaper was only printed in 1620, but it was written in Rome because England's laws were still too strict to print anything. The first successful newspaper in England was the Daily Courant, which started in 1702. By the 1720s, there were about a dozen newspapers in London. Ben's brother James had been a printer's apprentice in London. In 1717, James returned to Boston with a printing press in his possession, just in time for young Benjamin Franklin to come to help at his new print shop. This was one of the first print shops ever in North America. Quite an opportunity for a young Benjamin Franklin, one that would pay off very well for him. It took James a while to get set up, but by 1721, he would found one of America's first newspapers, the New England Courant. So now Benjamin Franklin, 16 years old, would work in the press shop during the day and then study every night, reading classic authors and writers of his time. So imagine a young, ambitious Benjamin Franklin. He's hanging around and helping his brother out at his print shop, but he's the younger brother. He's not going to be taken as seriously. Meanwhile, James is carrying on with a group of writer friends and acquaintances, talking about current events and what to put in the newspaper. Franklin gets the notion that he should try his hand at writing. So he invents a character, a widow named Silence Duguid. He wrote a type of letter to the editor from this character and slipped the letter under the door of the print shop late one night. This letter, the first of many, would be published on April 2nd, 1722. Here's an excerpt from the first letter. "My master was a country minister, a pious, good-natured young man, and a bachelor. He labored with all his might to instill virtuous and godly principles into my tender soul, well knowing that it was the most suitable time to make deep and lasting impressions on the mind, while it was yet untainted with vice, free and unbiased. He endeavored that I might be instructed in all knowledge and learning which is necessary for our sex, and denied me no accomplishment that could possibly be attained in a country place, such as all sorts of needlework, writing, arithmetic, and observing that I took a more than ordinary delight in reading ingenious books, he gave me the free use of his library, which, though it was but small, yet it was well chose, to inform the understanding rightly and enable the mind to frame great and noble ideas." And if it's not clear, Silence Duguid is supposed to be a woman. And Franklin obviously leaves out this minister's name as well, because he's trying to keep this person anonymous, because she doesn't exist. James Franklin and his associates were impressed by the well-written words of Silence Duguid and decided to put the letter in the New England Courant. This delighted his younger brother Benjamin, of course. Benjamin just kept submitting more letters to the newspaper as a result. And here's an excerpt, this one from the second letter, and it's so weird that this writing is being done by a teenage boy. "We lived happily together in the height of conjugal love and mutual endearments for near 7 years, in which time we added 2 likely girls and a boy to the family of the Duguids, envied my happiness and tranquility, and resolved to make me entirely miserable by the loss of so good a husband, hastened his flight to the heavenly world by a sudden, unexpected departure from this." So these letters are just talking about her life, meeting this minister, their courtship, and then the minister dies, making Duguid a widow. Franklin was definitely trying to endear his character to his readers, and then he was going to slip into his feelings about politics. So just take the last paragraph from the second letter. "I shall conclude this with my own character, which, one would think, I should be best able to give. Know then that I am an enemy to vice and a friend to virtue. I am one of an extensive charity and a great forgiver of private injuries, a hearty lover of the clergy and all good men, and a mortal enemy to arbitrary government and unlimited power. I am naturally very jealous for the rights and liberties of my country, and the least appearance of an encroachment on those invaluable privileges is apt to make my blood boil exceedingly. I have likewise a natural inclination to observe and reprove the faults of others, at which I have an excellent faculty. I speak this by way of warning to all such whose offenses shall come under my cognizance, for I never intend to wrap my talent in a napkin. To be brief, I am courteous and affable, good-humored, unless I am first provoked, and handsome, and sometimes witty, but always, sir, your friend and humble servant, Silence Do-Good. Did you catch how Franklin spent several sentences putting out that he was an upstanding citizen who loved the clergy? And is Silence Do-Good a do-gooder? She is a minister's widow, after all. Then he sandwiched in that one line about the state of the current government in New England, a hearty lover of the clergy and all good men, and a mortal enemy to arbitrary government and unlimited power. So the New England current was already known for being a very liberal and anti-colonial government newspaper. So James certainly was a big influence on his younger brother and the way he was writing. And remember, these letters are written to James Franklin, so they're meant to endear to James Franklin. They're basically letters to the editor. So as the spring turns to summer, James is publishing very anti-colonial articles in his paper. Silence Do-Good is still sending letters. In the June 4th issue of the New England Courant, 1722, James manages to piss off some government officials and is landed in jail for a month. Silence Do-Good would respond to this in letter number 8, sent into the paper 1 month later. Do-Good spent most of the letter talking about the freedom of the press and freedom of speech, and would actually quote a paper from the London Journal that was written 2 years earlier. Here's that quote. "Without freedom of thought, there can be no such thing as wisdom, and no such thing as public liberty without freedom of speech, which is the right of every man as far as by it he does not hurt or control the right of another. And this is the only check it ought to suffer, and the only bounds it ought to know. This sacred privilege is so essential to free governments that the security of property and the freedom of speech always go together. And in those wretched countries where a man cannot call his tongue his own, he can scarce call anything else his own." And Silence Do-Good doesn't even mention James Franklin's imprisonment in this letter either. Benjamin carefully kept the letter independent of that and let the public draw the connection themselves. The Silence Do-Good letters would then go on throughout the summer and fall and conclude in October after 14 letters in total had been written. James Franklin then put an advertisement in his own paper asking for Silence Do-Good to come forward. Benjamin Franklin then came forward as Silence Do-Good to his brother, and James was not happy. This created some tension between the two brothers. I sort of wonder if James had a bit of a crush on Silence Do-Good and it was a bit embarrassing. She was sort of manufactured to attract James in a sort of way. Many articles cite this strife as the reason for why Benjamin moved to Philadelphia, this growing tension between him and his brother. But it couldn't have been the only thing. James found out about the authorship of the Do-Good letters on October of 1722. Ben didn't leave for Boston until October of the following year, so nearly a year after finding out about his brother's deception. The Do-Good letters certainly created a rift between Ben and his brother, but it seems likely that Ben left Boston because of an accumulation of things. Honestly, I believe he just didn't want to live in his brother's shadow. He had ambitions of his own, and it was clear he wasn't going to be a partner to his brother at his print shop anytime soon. Also, in 1723, Benjamin Franklin was still just 17 years old. It's kind of amazing that he's making waves in the public as a writer at such a young age. You wonder if James was a little jealous of his young brother's talent and intellect. I certainly would be. If I came back from England having learned how to be a printer and thought I was hot shit to all my friends, only to have my little brother be the star of the show? You can sort of imagine the kind of tension this would create. When Franklin left Boston, he actually didn't know where he was going to end up at first. He just knew he wasn't staying in Boston. So his adventure began. He traveled by boat first to New York, seeking job prospects as a printer. He approached William Bradford, who was a successful printer at the time. He asked for employment, but Bradford turned him down. However, Bradford had a son who was also a printer and thought he might be looking for a new employee. He was located in Philadelphia, so Franklin took this tip and continued his journey heading for Philadelphia. Now remember, this is the fall of 1723. It's New England. It's cold. Upon leaving New York, Franklin traveled by boat, but the boat caught some bad weather and a squall tore the sail and nearly capsized the boat. It was a pretty miserable night at sea. Franklin made it to Perth Amboy in New Jersey and then set out on foot. He traveled 50 miles alone on foot out in the elements until he reached Burlington. It was a really rough trip, apparently. After walking several more miles, he caught a ferry and then eventually was able to get passage on a boat to Philadelphia. It took him 5 days to get to New York from Philadelphia. So what does he find when he gets there? We'll get into that next week. I'm going to talk about Benjamin Franklin for at least one more episode, but then we'll move on to a related topic. So if you want to support the show, please refer to the link in the show notes. There you'll also find the email for feedback, which I'd be delighted to hear. And until next time, this has been Meridians. I'm Charlie Noble. Thank you very much for listening.